Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Overtime Sports Show with Mike Wood, coming to you live from the City of Medicine, Durham, North Carolina, the greatest city on the planet. Tonight we got a great show for you. I got a co-host. Yes, I do. Tonight, her name is Linda Van Smith, and she is an old class. I'm not going to say old. She's a classmate of mine. Well, I guess it is. It's been a long time since we've been been in high school, but she's a classmate of mine, and she's going to be co-hosting the show with me tonight. And the special guest tonight is going to be Ollie Jeffers of MAD. We're going to talk about things that are related to MAD and things that actually make you mad that MAD is trying to do something about. So right now, what I'm going to do, without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Linda Van Smith. How are you doing this evening, Linda?
I'm doing fantastic, Mike. How are you? Glad to be on the show.
Hey, doing just great. Just doing the show. Today, make show 1,162. That's how many shows that we've done here on the Overtime Sports Show, and it goes all the way back. So I'm tired already just thinking about that number. Well, thank you so much for co-hosting the show today. And just a little bit of information, Linda will be on the show as we go on from time to time throughout the rest of the year into next year, and who knows what this leads to. She wants to get into radio, and, hey, we're going to help her get there. Well, Linda, for our listening audience out there, tell them something about yourself. I know you sent me a list of all this stuff, and it's going to sound boring coming from me. So tell us something about you.
Okay, Mike. Again, I'm Linda Van Smith. I am a graduate of North Carolina Central University. I do have an undergraduate degree in home economics, clothing and textiles, and then now I have my master's in special education. I got that from North Carolina Central University as well in special education. I am a teacher. I've been teaching for 25 years, and I'm towards the end of retirement.
Wow, for 25
years. And one more
years.
Thing, I have a daughter and mm-hmm. three grandchildren. I forgot about that.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I did say earlier, old classmate of mine, so I'm going to have to go back to that. Three grandchildren. But anyway,
okay,
well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to jump right into it, and we're going to bring on now on the line Miss Ollie Jeffers of MAD. How are you doing this evening, Miss Jeffers?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
Oh, I am doing fantastic. Hey, let's jump right into it. Tell us exactly what MAD is and what it does for the community.
MAD, the acronym, it stands for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to say that and exactly tell you what our mission is, because there are so many people who don't understand what it is MAD does. We are a nonprofit organization that basically a victim services. We work with victims who have lost loved ones who've been killed by impaired drivers. So in saying that, in order, I myself am a certified victim advocate. I'm beginning an advanced certification so for that. So I work when there's been a crash. We don't go out there, bother the family when there's been a crash. But what MAD does is we send a We Care card to let the family know that we care about them. And when they are ready for us, they can reach out to MAD so that we can assist them with there's so much that they'll need assistance with that at that time of the crash they won't think about. And one of the main things has to do with the legal system. We walk them from point A to point B through the legal system, and that's a lot that has to be done. So, and we do that. And we stay with victims not just through their trial. We stay with them. We maintain a relationship with them over the years, because when there's been a fatality, a crash, people don't. Sometimes, there are stages that people go through. So we work with them as they go through those stages. There's also, when you got your anger, your hurt, and all that. We stay there with them. So MAD does that, and we are 35 years old. We've been an organization 35 years in existence, and we are just as active today as we were in 1980. So
well,
that's what,
you know,
Mothers Against Drunk Driving does. We are, you know, a lot of people think we are against the drivers, and we have to say we are against the driving. We're against anyone who drives drunk. We're against the driving.
That's the thing. You're not necessarily against drivers. You're only against the ones who are driving drunk. It's kind of like a boycott. You don't want everyone to stop using the grocery store that you're boycotting. You just want the ones who use the grocery store to stop using the grocery store. Not everybody, because everybody doesn't use it. So, yeah, I can understand. Now, what kind of resistance? Now, I know that our government body, our legislature in Raleigh, the Congress, or whoever, with the federal monies and the mandates and all this stuff, you know, it blows my mind the amount of resistance that anyone meets who they're trying to pass bills, pass legislation that will curb drunk driving. But it seems like you run into a lot of resistance when you try to do that. My own personal opinion about it is you run into the resistance because if you were to put the anti-lock, you know, the breathalyzers on the cars so the cars wouldn't start, then there would be a whole lot of legislators who would be stuck at work because they wouldn't be able to get home because they would be blowing whatever it is. Now, my thing of it is, what kind of resistance are you facing, common sense stuff, from legislators and just those in power, whether it be in the city level, county level, state level, federal level?
Well, I can say this, that we lobbied for it last year, and it didn't pass. And, you know, House Bill 877 and Senate Bill 619, you know, we lobbied last year for them and it didn't pass. So we were back again. We were in Raleigh a couple of weeks ago lobbying again for them to pass. You know, what they would do is that a first-time offender that's convicted of drunk driving will have to have this interlock device placed on their car. At current day, you know, the laws now, if a person blow like a .15 or over, now they're required to put this device on their car. But what we are finding is that if a person is driving drunk and they have been convicted, they can get a limited driving permit, which allows them to continue to drive. So that's how we get so many repeat offenders. As you can see, there are a lot of people who've been convicted more than once. So that gives them that, when they get that limited driving permit, they, of course, have to pay a fee for that. They pay for this fee. But they also get to drive when and where they want to drive at any time. But if this bill is passed where the device, the interlock device, is placed on their car, then they will have to blow each time before they start the car. Now, in the past, the interlock device has been put on cars. And we had found out there have been people who were getting their children or grandchildren, neighbors, or whomever, to start their cars for them. They would get this car started, and the individuals would drive off, and they could still be drinking.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have to always stay one step ahead of most people. So now with this new device, you would blow into the device. And then after so many minutes, it will alert you to pull over because your car will stop in so many minutes. So you pull over, and you'll have to blow again. So the breath would have to match, that first blowing. It'll have to match. If not, then the car won't start. So to us, this would be a sure way to stop drunk drivers. It would be because, you know, if the device, if it detects alcohol, it's not going to start.
Well, let me ask you this.
If that person,
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go ahead, Linda.
Ms. Jefferson, I have a question. Uh-huh. So what if you're riding, someone else is riding in the car with you?
Uh-huh.
And then, they blow into the breathalyzer. And then the car stops. You're going to have that same person, not the person that was drinking, but the other person. They're going to blow into it again.
But
and so
the device is going to be able to determine the different breaths. That's what we are told. The device will be able to.
What if you have a person that's in the car with them? Say this person says, "I'm going to have a friend with me all the time."
Right.
I know, you know, I might have the car may stop, and I'm going to have to blow into the breathalyzer. But if you have someone else with you, like a friend, and they blow into the breathalyzer every time, then you're going to still have that problem.
Well, the cars, devices also has a camera that's attached to it.
Oh, gotcha.
I failed to get that part in. It does have a camera that's attached to it. So they will
Well, that makes more sense. Okay.
Yes, there's a camera that will be attached to it.
Okay.
So they will be able to see that.
Well, let me ask you another question, too, right quick. Now, if this thing obviously is computerized, okay, because it's going to have a camera to record, it's going to have a data chip, what says that a person can't hack into that? Because we got even six-year-olds that can do it now. They can't hack into that, override the system, and just drive without having to do that. Now, by the time that it's checked, I don't know if they check it every 30 days, every 10 days, whatever the regulation says, but if it's hacked to let that person drive, and that person's driven a whole month, you know, without going unchecked, and yes, they're going to get caught. But if they get caught, but nothing happens to them when they get caught, then what's the use of having it? It's like the limited driving privilege, okay? It's like, okay, I can go tell the judge, okay, I need to get back and forth to work. But you also knew before you put that bottle, can, or whatever it was up to your mouth that you had a job, that you had kids to take care of, you had a house, you had a plane, you had a boat, but yet you decided still to drink and drive. So therefore, I guess my question would be, once you make that conscious decision to do that, it should be thrown out the window, and the first time that you do it, you should not be able to drive. Now, will that stop people from driving? No. The only way to stop them from actually getting on the road, as I've read time and time again, repeat offenders, one guy in, I think it was Maine or somewhere, they've been caught 37 times.
Yeah.
So the only way to stop them from drinking is to lock them up. So what do you do? How do you handle that?
But it is my understanding that this device, if you're tampering with it, it's not going to start. It's not going to start. If there's any tampering. And these things are monitored on a daily basis. And if there's anything that's peculiar with them, now if you're driving along and the car detects, when it tells you to stop, and if you stop and you blow in and it detects alcohol, then your lights will start flashing, your horns stuff, to as an indicator that there's a problem, so that someone, law enforcement, or someone will know that there's a problem. But it's being monitored at all time. It's not like it's going to be monitored once a month. That's why there's a maintenance fee that's attached to that. There is a maintenance fee, which could come out to $3-4 a day that a person will have to pay for that. So, but it's not like it's just monitored once a month. It's monitored daily. There will be indicators there to let them know that there's a problem.
Yeah,
If there's a problem, they have to check it, then you're responsible for that, the maintenance on that. So a person's not going to know that. This is going to cost them more to do if they are tampering with it. It's going to cost you more.
Is there a rule that says, or a law that says, I have to, all right, let's say you put, I don't have but one car. That's all I have is one car. They put that device on my one car, but my neighbor has a car they're letting me drive. I don't have to drive that car. I can drive the neighbor's car that doesn't have any of that on it.
You can drive the neighbor's car. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens?
You can drive the neighbor's car. I mean, but then the neighbor is going to be responsible for any actions, anything that happens, and they're responsible for that. That will be hard to think that people will actually going to be accountable for one another like that, because, you know, if that person goes out and kills someone, then that individual is going to be responsible for allowing them to drive, you know. So, there's always going to, and I can assure you, there's always going to be someone who's going to always try to figure out a way to still drink and drive. And we know that. And you know that. There's going to be someone who's going to figure, they said don't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And this device, since I've been with MAD since 1998, is the closest thing that I've seen to save lives on our highways. Because, you know, when a first-time offender, now when they're convicted, they're considered a level 5. If they have a good driving record or whatever the case is, most of the time they're a level 5, which means they'll lose their license for a year. They're eligible for limited permit, but they pay a fine, they do community service. I mean, it's like a slap on the wrist. But now a repeat offender, each time that you get it, you're sentenced to more and more. But some people are just defined; they're just gonna do it anyway. They're going to continue to drive. Now, I had a lady that was in my class who had 25 driving while license revoked. There are people who are going to continue to do it. They don't care that you tell me don't drive, and this had been to jail, they've done all these things. But knowing that, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do, then they have to face the consequences. Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
if the consequences aren't really all that great, I mean, she's done that 25 times, and at some point, don't you say, even if somebody drinks, drives, and kills somebody, let's say they go to jail, I don't know, it's going to be probably manslaughter, because they're not going to call it murder, which it really is, because if I took a gun and shot that same person, it's murder, because I'm just using a 3-ton bullet instead of an 8-ounce bullet, okay? But they're going to go in, serve their 6 months, or if they have a really, really good lawyer, they're going to serve their year of house arrest, and during that year of house arrest, they're still going to be defiant and driving. They're going to catch them because they're wearing the ankle device, and they're going to slap them on the wrist and just add 3 more months, but yet they've taken this weapon out and could have killed somebody. You know, I'm confused about the whole thing. Well, Linda, you have any questions?
Let me just tell you what confuses me is that we have people that have those devices, you know, on their legs, and they're going to removing those devices from their legs, you know, under house arrest. So, I mean, you know, but, you know, that's too when you remove that, there's indicators so to let people know that they're removing them. So, you know, it's just like, what do you do? I think it's going to be a thing where people have to be responsible. You're going to have to just say to yourself, you got to be responsible for yourself. Because, I mean, no matter, you know, laws are in place to protect the innocent, protect all of us on the highways, but there are going to be always people who are not going to abide by the laws. And that blows my mind. That just blows my mind.
Ms. Jeffers, who initially paid for this device?
Well, now, as it is, the offender has to pay for it. Now, you know, what it is now, when you go in, if you are instructed to have an interlock device placed on your car, then you have to be responsible. You have to put on, there is a fee to have it installed, put on your car. And then there's a monthly maintenance fee the individual have to pay. And then there is a fee to have it removed from your car.
Wow.
So there was some talk about, you know, raising the fee, thinking that would cause people to think about it, make them think twice, because, you know, it could go as high as $200 a month for maintenance. It could go more than that, whatever fee that's set on it. It could go as high as $500 to install it. I mean, you know, that's what the talk was, $500 to install it, $250 a month for a year. You have to pay that. Plus,
what if you don't have the money to pay for that? What do you do?
Then you can't drive. And then the you can't drive. You're not supposed to drive. Let me just put that way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're not supposed to drive. But the interlock device was there just like the limited permit. It's so people who have jobs won't lose their jobs. You know, because if you have a job and you got to get to your job.
Mm-hmm.
The limited permit as well as the interlock device were supposed to be their tools to help you get to your job. Now, you may take them and use them other ways, but they are there to help you. And we have had some people, I've had some people who tell me that device saved their life. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because that made them stop and think every time they get in the car, the things they have to do. And they didn't want to live the rest of their life like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people tell me that saved their life. But I've also heard people to tell you it's a nuisance, it's bothersome, you know, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that when you get in your car at work and you got to blow, everybody's walking at the seat. They said it's embarrassing. But it's a situation that you put yourself in.
I would tell them it is better to be around to be embarrassed than to be forever 16, that little girl or that young man that you put in the ground. They're always going to be 16 for eternity because you're just a fool. But all you're suffering is just a little bit of embarrassment. Boo-hoo. And my thing of it is, how are you driving anyway? Better than that, why am I even talking to you? Why are you not in central prison eating bologna sandwiches right now?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
So don't, you know, for them to say embarrassing, I don't want to hear that. Because, I mean,
you, get all of it. You get all things, you know, people would say to you, all of it. But to have, you know, like I said, individuals to say, this saved my life, you know, and because, I, you know, when you, it's got to be, it's a lot to do, no matter when, because sometimes now, you know, if you want to go someplace, you just go get in your car and you go.
Right.
But, you know, if you got to blow in a device and do all the stuff and all before you can actually start your car, and then you're on your way to, you know, you could be going to the store maybe three or four blocks away, and you're going to have to pull over before you get to the store and blow again, and you know, and then you just want making a round trip. It can be, but it's also as a reminder to tell you that you got this device because of something you did. You know, you chose to drink and drive, you know. And those are things that we try to get people to say, these are the choices that you made. And because of your choices, this is what you'll have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see how it could be.
Well, the thing of it is, all I would say to them is this. You, like you just said, you made the conscious decision to put that liquor in your body. So I don't want to hear it. It's all about – one thing we have started doing here in America is we started putting what we do wrong on somebody else.
Exactly.
Well, I went over to Bob's house, and Bob made me drink. Bob made you drink this. Where is the gun that Bob used to put to your head? Can you show me that gun?
Right.
You know, it was peer pressure that everybody was drinking. Well, if everybody was playing Russian roulette, would you do that too? Because you have the choice to say, I'm not drinking, and they had a problem with that. That same car that you'll be driving under the influence, you still haven't drank, get back in that car and go home.
Right.
Iced tea is waiting for you at home. Or if you want to get home and drink till you drop at home. But don't get on the road. Now, speaking of that, what does MAD do also in the schools? I know that you have a great school outreach program. Tell us what you
do
in the local schools.
We as a matter of fact, we work with the driver's ed instructors. We go into the driver's ed instructors and we talk about highway safety, the dangers of drinking and driving on our highways. And we also try to get in the fact that, you know, because some of the students, you know, they don't drink and drive, but they're texting and driving. So we talk about how they're so similar, you know, because you're distracted while you're driving. So, we get that into that, we make them more aware of it. And we have the fatal vision goggles, and we take those into the schools, and we do demonstrations. And we try to get them to understand that if you are driving and you are distracted, this is how your vision will be. And they'll put the goggles on, they'll try to walk, and they can't. They'll walk into someone. Or, you know, things like that. We want them to understand that in driver's ed. And we also, we work with the SAD chapters. We go to the SAD conference each year, and which is held in Raleigh, and we talk about the same thing, you know, highway safety. You can't talk it enough. You can't get people to understand it, that it's just so many different distractions now compared to what it was 20 years ago. There are more people on our highways now driving than there were then. So there's more traffic, there's more distractions. So we try to get them to understand that if you driving on the highways in North Carolina is a privilege. So it's a privilege you can lose. So you can go out there and you can just think, I can drive in the way I want. Well, you're going to lose that privilege. And then you got to think about, you know, the rest of your life, how are you going to maintain your lifestyle with no license and having to call someone to carry you everywhere you want to go. You know, people are not going to do that. And having to take some places there's no public transportation. How are you going to get to where you need to go? So, you know, we do driver's ed. We do walk workers and SAD chapter. We not only do that, we go in any community events that we're invited to, and we talk about highway safety. So, and that's what we're doing in our schools. And I'm going to tell you, especially with prom now, and for prom, we do what is called prom promise. The week of the prom, we go into the schools and for that whole week, and we ask students to sign a promise not to drink and drive, not to ride with anyone that's drinking and driving, not to text and drive, not to be on the cell phone and driving, because you know prom night and everybody's so excited and you know they're all looking so pretty and everybody just the adrenaline's flowing. So we talk with them about safety on prom night. And and then we do that, and then we do project graduation as well. We work with the I'm on the actually project grad board, so we'll have project graduation coming up soon too for all the schools in Durham County.
Okay.
You know, I think it also would be a lot easier to convince the kids not to text and drive or not to be on the phone and drive if they didn't see the police doing the same thing. Now,
exactly.
I pull up beside police officers who are on, their own computers, you know, not even other people. I mean, it could be other people in the cars, and that's not really, that is a concern. But what I'm talking about is the very people they're supposed to enforce the law are breaking the law themselves. So, therefore,
Most of the officers are trained. They are trained to be on. They've got to be on their computers because they're actually checking traffic. Because you know they are. There's always something that's going on, and they're getting all kinds of calls and requests. That's how they get theirs.
And
they are trained to do that. They're trained to talk on the phone. While they're. Or be on the computer, because that's why they have computers now. Each car, each patrol car has a computer.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, when they're driving, they're on the computer. And I know they have to get to the call. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
And I know
right.
that sometimes they have to use cell phones. Don't get me wrong. But
right.
do they have to text on the cell phone while they're driving? Because they have a computer right there.
I agree with you. They don't have to text. But neither do most individuals. But do you know how many people, if you would just notice on a daily basis how many people are on their phones, how many people are texting while driving?
The cops don't give themselves tickets. They give the other people tickets. So what I'm saying is, how can a person who's supposed to be enforcing the law, they're breaking the law, but yet they're going to give you the same ticket they should be receiving themselves?
I don't know that they give a lot of tickets. I have not. I monitor court a lot. I don't see a lot of citations written for talking on the cell phone or texting. I don't, which they could. But then I do see a lot of other citations, but I don't see a lot. But I know that there are people out there who are on the cell phones and who are texting. I know that. But there are also people out there who are polishing their nails. There are also people that are putting on makeup. There are also people that are doing other things, putting their clothing on. They're doing that as well. So, I mean, there's so many distractions.
I've seen somebody putting on their clothes, driving with their feet.
I have too.
And we're going like 60 miles an hour, and they're driving with their freaking feet. And I'm sitting there like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But they're doing it well, but still, you can't do that.
But in that moment that they're doing that, they could take a life. They could kill an entire family while they're doing it. And I've seen that, that has happened, that the entire family is killed. And, you know, people on 40 do that. People driving along on interstates. They do that. They're on the phone. They're putting on makeup. They're doing everything on 40. You could kill an entire family. And we want people to be more aware. Just because you haven't lost anyone on the highways, last year, 2014, there were 378 people in North Carolina killed by impaired drivers. That is just unacceptable. Somebody's family. The loved ones. But I want to talk about one thing right quickly. This Saturday is the 21st of May. We have a walk. And Durham has a team called Team Mad in Durham. And at this point, we had about 67 members, 67 individuals, you know, from Durham and Roxborough have joined our team. But I would say to people that if you want to come out and make a difference, we'll be at the Dorothea Dix campus this Saturday at 10:30. And we have a 3-mile walk. And if you come, you can come out there and you can meet some of the victims who's lost loved ones. And if you speak with a mother who's lost her child who is just can't function, they're so devastated that she doesn't know what day it is, doesn't know how she got out of bed and all. And I'm going to tell you, you'll never be the same.
This was really confusing me the most about these legislators. They have people come in there and talk to them about this. They have people come in there and they actually see and witness the devastation and the harm and the destruction that drunk driving does and impaired driving does and buzz driving does. They see it all, but how is there something not in their human DNA, not in their psyche that will sit there and go, we need to put a stop to this. But I still say to put a stop to that would mean that they would have to put a stop to a lot of their colleagues and a lot of people in their families, too, and they're not willing to do it. What we have to do is we have to go to the polls. We have to get to the polls.
Right.
We have to do what we have to do. We got to get those people out who don't understand and just move them along. But we need to change. They debated about 30 minutes for House Bill 2 to find out where you go tinkle, but they won't sit down and have a serious debate about killing our children. Now, that right there is the most irritating thing to me in the world. I can pass a bill that would discriminate against everybody. Forget about the tinkling. It's the other stuff. I can't sue them in state court now. I can't do this. They don't have to pay me overtime. They don't have to do any of that stuff. That's the real meat of what HB2 is for. But the thing that gets me is, like I said, they will sit there and worry about a problem. They have a solution to a problem that did not exist. Now, here's a problem that does exist. Here's tangible evidence you can put your hands on. Here's all you have to do is go to the funerals. And that's tangible evidence that you can put your hands on. And they won't even sit down for 1 minute and consider a sensible
It's something that's preventable. I mean, it's 100% preventable. Not many things in life are 100% preventable, but this is. So, you know, if you're going to drink, then don't drive. So, I mean, that's just how easy it is. You know, it's preventable. So how can they not understand it? I don't get it. And I have to agree with you. I guess most of them are feeling like it would change their lifestyle. But, you know, I don't understand that. But you know, we look at it like that, and this is how it is. It's 100% preventable.
Yeah, I mean, I have a family.
Not many things in life are.
Yeah, I have not seen one person yet who has been shot with, it's almost like being, not one person yet has been shot with a loaded gun. Everyone that's been shot by somebody else, quote, accidentally, was shot with an empty gun. The gun is loaded with a bullet. When that drunk driver steps in that car, there's your bullet. When they start it up, they're pulling the trigger, and when they drive it, they're aiming the gun. So you mean to tell me we can have sensible legislation that says if I pick up this gun, and even if I accidentally shoot you, I'm still not off scot-free. I may get involuntary manslaughter. But if I kill you on the roads, I get a limited driving permit so I can go to work, and I killed you? Are you absolutely positively kidding me?
Right.
Yep, you do that. And this that you do.
Yeah.
It sounds like I need to run for the legislature. That's
please do.
Saying,
you guys, I'll be your campaign manager. I'm telling you, there must be some changes. We've got to make changes because if we
you know they wouldn't they wouldn't
more and more people every year.
Yeah, they wouldn't want me because see, I'm going to do what's right, and they don't want that, so they wouldn't want me because you know I may be one voice in the whole thing, and I may get voted down every time, but you will hear my voice screaming from the mountaintop. I may not get my bill across. I may not, but I tell you what, I'm going to be on the side of right.
Right.
I promise you that. Because I am tired of reading about these two kids in Georgia that left the prom less than 5 minutes after they left the prom. They were dead because they got hit
they
by
killed.
A drunk driver.
Exactly.
They were killed. Two beautiful young ladies taken from us because somebody decided they were going to be selfish and put a bottle to their mouth and then go out there. Did they mean to kill anybody? When everybody would tell me, well, they didn't mean to do it. Yes, they did.
They knew
what the consequences were when they got in the car. They know how stupid they are. We've had police officers on the side of the road assisting somebody who has a flat tire, who has been killed because a drunk driver came across four lanes and hit them on the interstate.
Yeah.
And because they're drunk. Now, I don't understand how they came from the far left lane all the way would hit that cop unless they wanted to. There's nobody that can convince me that if I'm in the far left lane that I'm going to go all the way over to the shoulder of the road and hit somebody. You can't convince me of that. I don't care if you're drunk or not. You can't convince me of that. It was an act that made you have to steer the car in that direction. But anyway, Ms. Jeffers, I want to say thank you so much for appearing on the Overtime Sports Show. We're going to have you on again, you know, real soon, because, like, summertime is coming. Kids are going to be out there driving, and maybe next time we can get a legislator to come on. I would love to try to find somebody who would come on the show and talk to us about the introduction of the bills and what it's going to take for us as citizens of North Carolina to push that bill through. The reason why a lot of stuff doesn't get through is because we don't know anything about it.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So getting the information out there about the bill, and if it's a good, sensible bill, then you get the people of North Carolina behind it. And as the song says, I do believe in November a change is going to come.
I hope so.
When that change comes, I'm going to play that song. I'm going to go stand outside the legislative building. And as the Republicans walking out the door, I'm going to say, a change is not going to come. It has come. Thank you so much for appearing on the Overtime Sports Show, and we'll have you on
a little bit
later on in the summer to talk about more about drunk driving.
And I'm sorry if I'm passionate about this. I may talk a little bit, you know, I get a little carried away, but I do thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing in North Carolina to try and save lives. And again, like I said, this Saturday we have a walk. And at this time, Durham County has 67 people thus far signed up for our team, which is great for Durham. I'm really excited about that many people signed up team at in Durham, because we're tired of it. We're tired of people dying on our highways. And there will be teams all across the state that will be there. I just pray that the weather holds out so we can go ahead and get our message across that we're tired of it. And we're going to make a difference.
Thank you so much for being on your show. Thank you. All right, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye-bye. That was Ollie Jeffers, as she called into the Overtime Sports Show to talk about Mothers Against Drunk Driving and legislation from around North Carolina that we need to get through to try to solve this terrible menace on our roads. Are we going to solve it? No. Can we cut it down? Yes, we can. And we'll be back with more right after this on the Overtime Sports Show.
Yeah, you, it's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Overtime Sports Show. Once again, I want to thank Ollie Jeffers of MAD for coming on and talking about Mothers Against Drunk Driving and just drunk driving, distracted driving, period. Well, Linda, you heard everything. I mean, you're a teacher. You work with kids every day. You see them in a middle school setting. And I know you want them to come back in 20 years and say, hey, Ms. Van Smith, how you doing? You don't want to get killed by some drunk driver. How does it, as a school teacher, as a mother, a grandmother, what do you think about the problem of drunk driving?
Yeah, actually, I do think that they need to have that breathalyzer, you know, in cars. Because I think legislature needs to do whatever they can to keep these drivers off the highway. And another thing, I do not think that they should get their driver's license. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
You know, somebody, you know, they need to find a way to get to work the best way they can. So that temporary license is that's appalling to me. That shouldn't happen. Because I think
that's just like
maybe they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like giving a heroin addict more heroin. It's like giving a coke addict more coke. I mean, so you're giving them their license back for them to continue to drink and drive?
Yeah, Right, and I think, too, you know, not only should it start, you know, it starts in high school, but it should even start earlier. You know, like you've been in my classroom, eighth grade, it should start there because kids, students are doing that. You know, they're doing a lot of things. They're doing a plethora of things that we don't know about. So it should start as early as that. You know, and here again, visuals, you know, they should put all that into place so students will know that it is serious and the consequences should be steep, you know.
Yep, you're right. Well, Linda, thank you so much.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, it should be more than it is, but like I say, until the muckety-mucks in Raleigh start, you know, they're not going to do it because, see, they drink and drive, too. So when they do that, then they don't want to get caught. And if they do get caught, then they do everything
Try
to get out of it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you read it all the time.
Right.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for co-hosting the Overtime Sports Show. Like I say, we're going to have you on more and more as time goes on. And we're going to be getting back in sports here a little bit lately, so in just a little while. So we're going to see exactly what your prowess is in the world of sports. We'll see exactly how that goes.
Okay.
Well, Linda, thank you so much. And like I said, we'll do it again next time. And, hey, it's been a blast. And you have a good evening.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. That was my co-host, Linda Van Smith, tonight. And she was helping me out with interviewing Ollie Jeffers on MAD. And I wanted to say thank you. She did a fantastic job. And so, yes, I think she does have a future in radio. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Overtime Sports Show. Come back again tomorrow night, 6:30, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
I'm